From Welcome Villain Films, the studio that brought you the horror hit Malum, as well as Beaten to Death and Hunter Killer, comes their newest nightmare, Mind, Body, Spirit, now available on digital. Directed by Alex Haynes and Matthew Miranda, and produced by Dan Asma, Mind, Body, Spirit follows Anya, an aspiring yoga influencer, as she embarks on a ritual practice left behind by her estranged grandmother. What starts as a spiritual self-help guide quickly evolves into something much more sinister, as Anya becomes increasingly obsessed with the mysterious power of the practice. She unwittingly unleashes an otherworldly entity that begins to take control of her life and her videos. Now, Anya must race to unlock the truth before her descent into madness threatens to consume her mind, body, and spirit. During its festival tour, with stops at Chattanooga Film Festival and the Unnamed Footage Festival, Mind, Body, Spirit garnered praise from critics who call it a found footage version of Hereditary and a knockout found footage horror movie for the live stream era. Experience the first ever yoga-themed found footage horror film, and don't miss the film viewers have called extremely frightening and upsetting. Available now on digital anywhere you rent or buy movies online, including Prime Video and Apple Plus.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
What is The Briefing Room?
It's a behind-the-scenes look at how the criminal justice system works and the lives of the people within that system.
If you love true crime, well, these are the real people who do the job every day of making sure justice is served.
Hi, I'm Detective Dave.
I'm Detective Dan. Together, we have decades of experience in local law enforcement, a profession that we think is often misunderstood.
So we're going to explore how to do it right, and we won't shy away from when it's done wrong. These are stories you'll hear nowhere else. Unique, frank, and unvarnished.
From the team that brought you Small Town Dicks, this is The Briefing Room. Episode 1 drops on August 30th.
We'll meet you in The Briefing Room.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
And welcome back to Little Cuts, our weekly minisode where we dig into the things that we've been watching and or playing recently. I'm Terry.
And I'm Mary Beth. This week, we are talking about voyeuristic eroticism, my favorite phrase, happy mustachioed men, psychic acrobats, another incredible phrase, and possibly the best 90s creature feature.
Yeah, we are.
Okay, fuck pleasantries. What is this voyeuristic eroticism? I need to know immediately.
Okay, so I got to watch this movie that's hitting Amazon the day of this episode releasing. It is called The Voyeurs.
Oh.
And kind of on the nose title, but it brings me to mind like some of the erotic thrillers that I would watch in like the 90s.
Okay.
And so this one is kind of, it takes like the premise of maybe like a Rear Window or Disturbia and adds like a veneer of sexuality to it, where this couple, Pippa and Thomas, and Pippa is played by Sydney Sweeney, who has like grabbed attention in The White Lotus recently. Have you watched
okay.
The White Lotus?
No, I know of it, but I haven't watched it, no.
So she was in that, and her boyfriend, Thomas, who's played by Justice Smith, who is in Generation on HBO Max recently, they have bought this new fangled high-rise apartment in Montreal, and the first night that they're there, they notice that they have like huge like windows, and the apartment across the way also has huge windows and don't believe in curtains. And this man and his you discover her to be his wife start like fucking. And they start watching and they're like kind of into it, but like, ooh, should we be doing this? And they're like, oh, but I think they obviously want people to watch. And so they start to watch him, and then they get kind of enthralled in their life as they start to see what is happening in that apartment, where the man is a fashion photographer who frequently photographs nude models. And one time when his wife is out and he's photographing this model, and he's like trying to coax her into getting nude. He strips off his shirt, and of course he is ripped fine. To the tens, like, yeah, just fine. Like, he's nothing but abs and pecs, like that is literally all he is. He strips off and he's like, yeah, see, you know, I'm comfortable, and she does too, and then before you know it, they're making out, and then he is going down on her, and
good for him.
They start to fuck, but this is a model and not his wife. And then his wife comes home later, and
so wait, they're watching this from the window.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. To the point where they get binoculars, and then they discover that they can, like, somehow, I don't know if this really works, but they're able to somehow take a laser pointer and they sneak a mirror in over at their house. It's so convoluted. And they start listening to him. So that they just, like, get so super involved in this couple that are living across the hall. And then they find out that this man is obviously cheating on his wife and is gaslighting her into saying, no, I'm not doing that, because she thinks that he's cheating on her. And he's like, no, baby, I'm not doing that. Why would you think that? So he's basically gaslighting her. And So Pippa decides that she needs to get involved.
Oh, never do that. Why would you do that?
Yeah. And then it goes from there. So this movie, it's, first of all, it's 2 hours long. Listeners, if you saw my tweet about Screener 2 hours, that is this movie. I don't think it necessarily earns the 2 hour runtime. And I think it's a little confused in terms of, like, sometimes it feels very melodramatic. Like, there's some parts of it that I'm just like, okay, this is a little over the top. And some parts of it, like, verges into camp at some points. But then there's some really interesting twists in it. And it's kind of a mess of a movie, but I also kind of was enthralled the entire way through. So I kind of recommend it. It'll be, as of today, when this episode drops, it's on Prime Video. So you can go watch it. I'm happy that the erotic thrillers are coming back. I kind of have missed them. I feel like cinema today seems really sexless in a lot of ways.
Yeah, there's been a lot of, like, discourse on Twitter about this too, but it's true. There is, like, a lot less sex than in 90s erotic thrillers, which was, like, so steamy, so good, and now there is a lot less sex. But, like, you know, there's a difference between what I'm saying, like, what we're saying too, like, sex and sex scenes. Mm-hmm. Like, I want a movie that makes me, like, like, you feel almost inappropriate watching it, but it's, like, a good time. So I would like that to come back, because I feel like we're all just, like, really repressed and horny after the past, like, year and a half. So I think it's time.
Seriously.
I think we're ready for a renaissance of the erotic thriller.
I mean, we're in this point of cinema where it's like the comic books were saying that, like, Batman can't go down on someone because that would be something that a villain would do. Like, this is the kind of point that we seem to be at in cinema. And it just, you have all these comic books movies where there's incredibly attractive people, and you know they have to be fucking, but we can't ever talk about that because we have to be, you know, oh, that's shameful. Superheroes don't do that kind of thing. Like, that's the kind of cinema that I feel like has been kind of permeating the culture right now. And so the fact that this isn't 100% successful, and I don't think it's as steamy as a lot of the erotic thrillers that I've seen in my heyday, but it's a step in the right direction, and I'm here for the way that it kind of plays with this idea of the outward facing, you know, characters that we see vice what is actually really happening. So there's stuff here, and hey, erotic thrillers, bring them back, please.
Please. Thank you.
Please and thank you. So
I want to be scared and horny. God damn it.
Right? Please?
I'm saying it. I want to be scared and horny at the same time. That's all I want.
That's all I want. I gotta ask though, happy mustached men?
So this does not have me either horny or scared. So
I was like, are we?
This is not that. I started watching Ted Lasso.
Oh yeah,
which is, like, the opposite of horror. I know, but I have, you know, it's new job, like a lot of stuff just going on. And so I was like, I need to watch something that's got like positive energy. And I decided, Steve and I decided to watch Ted Lasso, give it a try. And it is the best thing. It is. Have you watched it?
I've seen like the first five episodes of season one.
We watched season one in a day.
Wow.
So it's only 30-minute episodes. It's only 10 episodes. They're quick. But it is the positivity that I've needed. And not in terms of like Leslie Knope positive, but there's like a realism to the positivity. And it's much more grounded than like, I'm Leslie Knope, waffles, breakfast. Like I respect her and I love her. But this is not so optimistic. It's got... There's a lot of really positive, happy things in a way that makes it feel like an actual, like actual people rather than characters.
Right. So what's it about for those that don't know?
Yeah. So Ted Lasso is it's streaming on Apple TV. It's about a man named Ted Lasso, played by the wonderful Jason Sudeikis, who moves to England to coach a soccer team. And he's never coached soccer in his life. He has only coached like Division II college football. But his reputation is that everyone loves him. Like he is a sweet person and everyone like falls in love with him. He's brought over by the club's owner, the soccer club's owner, football club, football club's owner, who is going through a shitty divorce and she wants to tank the club. And she thinks he'll tank the club. But she did not know how kind and sweet that the sweet boy is. And it's all about him like bringing the team back together and helping all of these kind of broken people not necessarily get all the way better, but like start finding their like their family and kind of like heal in their own way. And it's just so good.
It's really wholesome.
It's very wholesome. And it's like I watch so much scary shit all the time and I love it, but it's sometimes nice just to watch like a wholesome show. And just like cry because things are happy.
Right.
Because things are cute. So that's what I have been watching on top of the anime that I talked about last week, Jujutsu Kaisen. Just more of that anime.
So you finished season one. Have you started two?
Yeah. We watched the first episode of two. And so we are slowly catching up. I think we needed a break for a couple days. But this weekend we'll probably... dive right back in. See, that's the thing with Steve. He can binge things, but he's also a little bit more regimented about it. Like, he's like, we don't have to watch all of the seasons at once. Like, we'll watch one season and then we'll take a break. And I'm like, must consume it all. So he helps keep me a little bit more balanced in terms of like not devouring every piece of content of a show. I like
balance each other out. It's perfect.
So I highly recommend that if you have Apple TV. And also Servant's on there. Terry's been preaching the good word about Servant. Mythic Quest, I heard, is really good too.
Mythic Quest is fucking amazing.
Yeah.
I've been meaning to talk about it and I haven't. But like there is two episodes of that I think are... Well, one episode in particular I think is the best episode of television I've ever seen.
I've heard... And okay, you saw that. A couple people have said that or like adjacent comments about an episode.
And they did this episode in between season one and two that is a quarantine episode, and it's all over like Zoom. And I wanted to bring this up for you in particular because it definitely has a Second Life vibe to it. And it made me bawl my eyes out because it was like relatable content AF. And it's such a good show. So yeah, Apple TV, I'm telling you, between Servant, Mythic Quest, Ted Lasso, Foundation is starting in a few weeks. And from everything that I've heard, that's going to be really good. And then they have this... sci-fi, I forget what it's called, but the sci-fi like end of the world alien invasion film coming out or series coming out in October. So like honestly at this point, and if you have a PlayStation 5 you can get 6 months free.
Yep.
So not that this is an ad, like I wish we were getting money off of this, but like
I know, seriously, fucking like between you talking about Servant and Nami with Ted Lasso, it's like sponsor us, we'll hawk your content.
Seriously,
keep making good content, except for that show about with Jason Momoa and David Bautista in the world where everyone's blind.
See?
That one, it's okay. You have to strike out sometimes. You can't always make great stuff. Sometimes you make a dud, and that's okay.
But But you know, I love when content providers like this and like HBO Max are at the beginning of their kind of establishment where they're taking risks on things, and because they don't have a whole breadth of content like Netflix is, they're not as like instant cancelization. Like they're allowing things to like grow and breathe. So it's like the fact that a show like Servant can exist and can get, you know, all of a sudden we're up to going to be up to 3 seasons before we know it. Like the fact that we're not canceling this kind of stuff. I love that we're at that moment with Apple TV where they're just letting weird things happen and see where it goes.
Sometimes big corporations with lots of money do good things. Doesn't make them good, but sometimes they'll do okay things.
And then they turn into Netflix where it's like, you're lucky if you survive 3 seasons at some point.
With that, Apple TV and HBO Max, I'm hoping, because they have like, they already have existing properties. You know what I mean? Like Apple already has like a whole other company behind it. HBO Max already has a backlog of things on top of originals. So it kind of is, they have like a fallback, which is kind of cool too. And it gives them that space. Why are we talking about streaming? Why does that come up? Anyway, psychic acrobats.
Let's pivot.
Let's do a little flippy flip in the air, like a psychic acrobat. And
Into people's minds and help them. So back in 2005, this little game released by Double Fine Productions came out. Psychonauts. Have you played Psychonauts?
Steve is playing Psychonauts 2 right now, and I've been watching him play it.
I am playing Psychonauts 2, and let me tell you, Psychonauts, I apparently was one of the only people that played the original Psychonauts because it only sold 100,000 copies in the first year.
Really?
And it was a critical success, it was an absolute failure and almost like destroyed the company. But it was a game that I absolutely fell in love with, and I have been wanting since that game came out for the sequel. Because it ended with not a cliffhanger, but an introduction to a bigger world. And boy, I have been playing Psychonauts 2, and I am in love, Mary Beth.
I haven't been playing it. Steve has, but I've been watching him play. Because he's like, you'd love this. And I'm obsessed. Like, it's amazing. Everything about... I'll let you talk about it.
So Psychonauts is about this kid named Raz, who was part of an acrobatic family
in
a
circus. His
name
was Rasputin. We have to.
His name is Rasputin.
That's a very important detail because Steve told me what his name was, and I was like, I love him already. So,
So Rasputin was a member of a circus with his family, and his family had been cursed by psychics, and so they hate psychics. And then Raz discovers that he is a psychic, so he's had to keep it secret. Hello, queer narrative right there. And he runs away from his family to go become a member of the Psychonauts, which is this international group of people that go out there and go into people's minds and fix things and, you know, do all that kind of psychic type stuff. So the first game, he's at camp and he is learning to be a psychonaut. And by the second game, he is now an intern working for the Psychonauts. And boy, I don't know how far you and Steve are in this. I'm about like five or six. I'm trying to take it slow.
He finished it. He's been playing it for a couple, like a week, I think.
I've been trying to take it slow because I want to savor it. I think I've heard that's about like 20 hours. So I'm like,
that's about right.
Really excited. There's still a lot of game left, but I'm telling you, some of the levels in this are just,
I cried a little bit because a lot of it's about psychological trauma and like, and it's like, a beautifully animated game, like so detailed. It like reminds me of Coraline a little bit, like in terms of like the intricacy and like the style. But it's like this really kind of silly carnivalesque aesthetic, but with like really good story and really good writing. And it's like really emotionally intense.
I'm telling you, I love Tim Schafer. He is the owner of Psychonauts, of Double Fine. And he is the writer for, I believe, most of, if not all, of their games. And he kind of cut his teeth on Maniac Mansion 2 and Grim Fandango and a bunch of
Fandango.
And so he has like this kind of whimsical but also horrific type stuff. Like there are some things in this game that is like kind of horrific. Like there's a level where you're inside someone's mind and they're like, it's all about teeth. And so everything is teeth. There's teeth coming out of everything. And it's, so there's definitely like some things that kind of push the boundaries a little bit. Like one of the levels that I just absolutely was rolling on the floor with is a game show for like a food thing. And you have to like go pick up these foods and blend like strawberries and everything. And the strawberries are like, yay! They're so excited to be. Well,
and it's like sheep or like some kind of, is it sheep?
There's a pig.
Or like they're like a pig, sheep host. Like, yay!
Yes, yes.
You have to pick up the egg, and they're like, little faces on them, and they're like, hooray!
And you have to go boil the egg, and these are like, you know, anamorphic food, and it's like, I'm here for this.
It's so fun.
The level that I just beat was inside some like aging rocker's mind, and it was like psychedelic, and just like, it felt like you were on an acid trip from the 60s.
And did you do the mailroom yet?
No. Okay. I think I'm right there. I think I'm like right at that point. But it's just, it's so good. And I think this is probably so far the best game that Double Fine has made. I think from the writing, from the graphics, from the gameplay, I think this is a masterpiece, and I cannot wait to continue playing it. I'm so
I know
in love.
Steve really loved it. He got frustrated with some of the platforming aspects, some of it's like not super intuitive, and it's a little bit of a pain. But he loved it.
Yeah, I've been having, and I wasn't quite sure because I sometimes have some depth perception in platformers, and I didn't know if that was like an issue for me or not. But like, I have been having a couple issues with the platforming levels for sure. But it's not as bad as the original one. Like the original one was a chore to play. I mean, that shows you how much I loved it because I finished the game. But it was definitely a chore to play, and this one is a bit more refined, shall we say?
Cool. Yeah,
I love it.
It's amazing. That looks so good. It's just a
game. Go play it.
And kids can probably play it too. Like, it's a game for all ages. So if you have kids or you want to play it with like a younger sibling or something, that's also an option.
Yeah, because it definitely, it definitely fits that teen rating, I would say. Yeah. Some of the humor is a little bit more mature, but it's not a thing like, I don't think it would
gross.
Be inappropriate for kids.
Might go over some kids' heads, but that's that's fine.
And it's so whimsical.
It's so whimsical.
I love it. Okay. So, what was the aquatic horror movie we watched this week, Mary Beth?
We watched, let me make sure I get the year right real quick. We watched, never mind, it's not in front of me. We watched Deep Rising.
From 1998.
That's right. From 1998 by Steven Sommer, the guy who directed The Mummy, not 1 year later.
Yes. How wild is that?
This is such a good... What? Justice for Deep Rising.
Justice for Deep Rising.
But Terry...
Did you love?
What is... Yes. I love this. I'd never seen it before, but Terry, what is it about real quick before we jump in?
So Deep Rising is about a group of hijackers who are going to board and sink a luxury ocean liner in the South Pacific, and they arrive to discover that there is a tentacled, I mean, it's kind of, I guess it's supposed to be a surprise, but it's basically a kraken has taken up its lair inside the ship and has eaten everyone. And they all of a sudden have to deal with this ginormous creature that devours people with its man-eating tentacles. And it is an amazing creature feature. I saw this in theaters in 1998.
Amazing.
And here's the thing. Me as a 17-year-old, I cannot believe this didn't get a sequel. Me as a 40-year-old, I cannot believe this movie got made.
Why?
And I mean that in the positive way.
Why?
Because it was, someone spent $45 million in 1998 for this film, which for inflation would be a $75 million aquatic horror movie made today. And it only made $11 million worldwide.
No.
And I was like, man, can you imagine someone making an $80 million aquatic horror movie this year? And I was like, oh, wait, they did. It was underwater. And that also crashed and burned at the movie theaters just last year.
I don't like that. Put some respect on aquatic horror's name, everybody, please.
Seriously.
Underwater was good. But, okay, Deep Rising is ballsy.
Yeah. What were your thoughts? I've been dying to know.
So I... the cast of characters is incredible. Like, usually there's, like, because there's the group, there's the crew that was, like driving the ship, the hijackers, Famke Janssen, who is a convict that is never brought up again. Like, she tried to kill her ex-boyfriend. That's brought up one time, and that's why she survives, because they locked her in the fridge. Incredible.
And she's just sitting there eating food and drinking champagne while shit is happening. And like, I'm like,
queen status, though. And then, like, the captain of the ship. Everyone sucks in their own special way, and I love them all together. Like, the chemistry between the group is incredible, and it's so fun. Like, the energy is so good. Mm-hmm. But then, like, it's horrific. Like, when the tentacles barf out people, they're half digested, and there is a set piece that I was like, how is this not talked about? When they walk into, like, the lair,
And it's just, like, goopy-ass skeletons everywhere.
Screaming. I was like, I'm shocked. This is fucked up. This is fucked up.
Big budget horror movie, and it does that.
Right? Like, I was like, this movie should be talked about more for this moment alone. You know what I mean? Like, that's the kind of, like, big set piece that I feel like people always talk, like, would always talk about. Like, with a horror movie. Like, especially an aquatic horror movie. Yeah. Like this. Love that it's a kraken. Love that its tentacles have its own little mouth at the end that, like, fucked up sea stars. And that they just, like, barf out people from their tentacles. Or its tentacles. As you do. The cast is very good. So
diverse cast.
Right? Wes Studi's in it? Like, what? He's in it. But also, Treat Williams as John Finnegan, like the captain of the other ship. I want him in more. I was like, who is this man? I love him as the captain. He's incredible.
You know, I was watching this and I was thinking, why does this feel so familiar to me? And then I realized this crew is giving me like Joss Whedon Firefly crew vibes, where it's just like this sort of like ragtag group of, you know, with the captain and his first mate, played by Kevin J. O'Connor.
Kevin J. O'Connor. He's so good.
He is. He's so good in this film. But it was giving me that sort of like ragtag kind of group that Joss Whedon had like mined in a bunch of his stuff. And it makes me sad that this movie flopped.
There's a moment where one of the characters runs into a safe and yells, "Money!" and is immediately axed in the head. And I was like, this is an incredible film. Like, it's got a sense of humor. Like, it knows exactly what it is. So it, like, has some really good action moments, good tension, good gore, but it also has good comedy and trying to not take itself so seriously. I mean, it might not always land, but, like, I appreciated it. I was like, this is a good action, horror, comedy kind of, like, combination.
You know, some of it was a little bit silly rewatching it, because it definitely feels like an Aliens ripoff, where, you know, group of people arrive, the bodies are mysteriously missing. They're like, where did everyone go? They can't find them. It's like everyone disappeared. They have these guns that I feel like are making sounds that, like, you'd go to laser tag and be like, like, that's the kind of guns they're using. So there's like a silly vibe to it that I think kind of verges on camp in the best way.
Yes, yes, yes. Camp. That's a good way to think about it. I didn't think about it as camp.
I also love when there's a shot of people running over like planks and they're exploding behind them, sort of like in Tremors. And we get that shot in this movie. I'm like, I'm here for it. It's such a small niche thing, but I'm like, yes, give me more of that.
Right. Yeah. I don't know what I expected, but it wasn't this. And I'm glad for that. I guess I thought it was going to be some like very serious, like kind of funny because it's so serious kind of movie, but nope.
No,
I was wrong.
And that's why I was so upset that we didn't get a sequel, because the ending, you know, they finally get off the ship and they're on the island and then there's like this giant roar. And I'm like, what's going to happen next? 17-year-old me thought. Turns out nothing.
Nothing.
Because no one went to go see this movie, unlike me, that I think I saw it twice in the movie theaters.
Really?
I think I did, yeah. This was my shit. Quadricore and creature features. Set design's so lush, though. Like, some of the shots of the ocean liner.
I love me a good cruise ship horror movie. I want more. Yeah. I love more of them. I hate cruise ships. I've never even been on a cruise, but cruise ships...
Me neither.
No, thank you. I'm good. I don't need it. And I love claustrophobic horror and like what you can do like in a hallway space. Like there's a scene when Wes Studi and Kevin J. O'Connor are in this like hallway scene and it's like such a small space, but they do so much with like water and grenades and getting chased. And it's just, it's really creative in how it uses these spaces to make it terrifying. Like I just always appreciate that a lot with creation of claustrophobia.
And, you know, CG monster, not terrible. I mean, it definitely feels aged today, but not terrible.
Right? Yeah, the CGI is not amazing, but I've seen worse in 2021.
Yeah, same. Same.
So.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. I loved this movie so much.
I know. I'm also glad I enjoyed it. Also, Famke Janssen, give her more work, please. Queen of... late 90s, early 2000s, weird horror movies. She deserves more.
Quintessential femme fatale. Like, she just...
I want a prequel origin story about how she got on the cruise ship and how... Ooh. Like, that's what I want.
Yeah.
I want that a lot.
So there we go.
Greenlit.
Deep Rising.
Bring her back. Yeah. Bring her back to play her younger self. I don't care.
Avant-garde. Hey, they're doing it with Orphan. So.
Exactly. See? Perfect. So that is this week's Little Cuts. Terry, who are we talking to on Monday?
Okay, so on Monday we are sitting down with horror journalist and author Nat Bremmer to discuss his book on the Puppet Master franchise, which is coming out either the end of September or beginning of October. I'm not 100% sure, but coming out soon. You can pre-order it everywhere. But we're talking to him about that and also how Ernest Scared Stupid, out of all of the horror movies that he saw growing up, weirdly terrified him. And boy, that movie.
It's something.
It sure is. And if you know nothing about Ernest, we will dig into that. We will talk about him and Vern. We will talk about all of that kind of stuff. So we will get you up to speed.
Yeah, because I knew nothing. So we'll learn together. Join me on this journey. I guess.
Okay. And so what are we doing for next week's Little Cuts, Mary Beth?
Oh my God. We're doing it found footage style with the Bay.
Yeah.
I'm so excited. I love this movie. And it takes place in Maryland, where I live. We're a small state. I take what I can get.
There you go.
But yeah, I am very excited to watch this 2012 found footage movie. It should be it's pretty easy to find out there, so if you want to watch it before we cover it, please do. It's a great found footage and it's gory, so
I remember, I haven't seen it since it first came out, but I remember really, really digging it, so I'm excited to revisit it.
Yeah, me too. But so listeners, you've heard from us, but we want to hear from you. Did you watch a film or played a game that we watched or played this week and have thoughts? Do you have suggestions for movies for us to cover? Send us an email at scarredforlifepodcast@gmail.com, or you can reach out to us directly on Twitter. I am at MB McAndrews.
And I'm at Gailey Dreadful.
And of course, don't forget to follow the podcast on Twitter at Scarred Podcast.
And please don't forget to review, rate, blah. And please don't forget to review, rate, and subscribe.
Thank you to Eric Parr for our artwork. Thank you to Sean Keller for our music. Thanks everyone for listening. Please stay safe out there. But most importantly, stay creepy.
And until next time. We'll be right back.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
What is The Briefing Room?
It's a behind-the-scenes look at how the criminal justice system works and the lives of the people within that system.
If you love true crime, well, these are the real people who do the job every day of making sure justice is served.
Hi, I'm Detective Dave.
I'm Detective Dan. Together, we have decades of experience in local law enforcement, a profession that we think is often misunderstood.
So we're going to explore how to do it right, and we won't shy away from when it's done wrong. These are stories you'll hear nowhere else. Unique, frank, and unvarnished.
From the team that brought you Small Town Dicks, this is The Briefing Room. Episode 1 drops on August 30th.
We'll meet you in The Briefing Room.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.